up, delivers downfield, intercepted! Jamari Sharp makes the pick that will clinch Indiana's first national championship.
Of experienced veteran guys are going to come out of here with the school's first national title.
I think it's got to be one of the greatest stories we've ever seen in college football. One of the losingest teams in college football history at the start of the year to now the national champions.
A century of futility is forgotten. The Indiana Hoosiers are the kings of college football.
Yowza, yowza. From the student section behind the goal line on Saturdays to the buzzer beaters of the madness of March, welcome to the inaugural episode of Bowl Games and Brackets. I am Joe, and I am joined by my compadre Darren, and we are here to take you through the world of college football and basketball. From the rivalries and underdogs to the legendary performances, we will be your guide. From your dorm room to the tailgate, we have you covered each and every week. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. And welcome, Darren, to episode one.
Joe, I'm pumped to be here. I hope you are as well. Actually, I know you are as well. And why not start with the biggest conference that there is? I mean, we're talking college football. This is the conference, the Big Ten, that has gone out and been winning the championships. Everybody's SEC, SEC, SEC. The Big Ten has been the conference that keeps finding a way to get out on top. And you know what? Last year, you know, Indiana, as you heard in that opening clip, the defending national champions. If you would have told us 5 years ago Indiana would be a champion in anything in college football, we would have laughed our butts off. No, Joe?
That's true. That's true. To steal Bill Walton's line, the Big Ten is now the conference of champions.
No doubt about it. And Joe, when we look at this conference, the Big Ten, more so than even the SEC, seems to have a few teams that kind of rise to the top, a bunch of teams that hang in the middle, and then the bottom feeders a little bit more. It's a little bit more top-heavy. And as we've been talking, you know, going through all the teams here through the offseason, I know one has stood out to you, Joe. There's one team that you kind of like this year. Why don't you tell us about that?
It's the Ducks, baby, the Oregon Ducks. Week one, we're already getting hot. It's the Oregon Ducks under Coach Dan Lanning, who's 48-8 in his first four seasons out in Oregon. They've been having a tough time. Last year was with Indiana. They couldn't beat them. Those were their only two losses all year, was to Indiana. But they bring back Dante Moore, returns as quarterback. Dylan Raiola, they brought him in as a backup from Nebraska. So God forbid something happens to Dante, they've got themselves covered. They have thunder and lightning in the backfield, Jordan Davison and De'Aaron Hill Jr. The wide receivers of DeCorian Moore and Jeremiah McClellan. They got the transfer from UAB, Hawks, and Evan Stewart returns from his knee injury. Jamari Johnson's going to take over in the tight end role. And they brought in from Yale a right tackle, Michael Bennett III. So on offense, Oregon is set. Dan Lanning's got these guys ready to go. On defense, Bear Alexander, Amari Washington. These guys are back on the defensive line. Linebackers Jerry Mixon and Devin Jackson are going to hold it down. And in the portal, they brought in Coy Parrish from Minnesota and Carl Williams IV from Baylor to anchor the back end. They're looking at freshman Jet Washington from Bishop Gorman in Nevada. He's the nephew of Kobe Bryant. Keep an eye on him. He's going to be helping them out. And their goal is the national title or bust. And since we've had four different champions from the Big Ten in the last 4 years, it's only fitting that Oregon be the fifth in 5 years. So I'm going to go with the Ducks. I think their biggest the biggest thing was their defense struggled the last couple of Januaries for them when they've gotten to the bowl games. And ironically, they've lost to the last two national championships in the last 2 years in the playoffs, to the national champions, I should say, in the playoffs the last 2 years. So right now, I think that they're all set. I like them. I think the Ducks are going to be good. Their first big test is going to be late September, when they're playing USC. And then in November, they have clash. They go to Ohio State, Michigan, back-to-back, and they're going to open the year against Boise State.
Okay, so the Ducks have – is there anything that makes you nervous about the Ducks, Joe?
They have new coordinators, and their defense has struggled in the past. But I think with everything going together for them now, they've put it all together. Dan Lanning has his team together. He has his shot. I think this is the best shot Oregon's had in a while. And I think their nervousness is if they lose a quarterback, they'd be done. But by bringing in a seasoned backup, they have prepared themselves not only for this year, but also for next year as well. So Oregon could be a team to contend with for years to come.
Okay. Now, listen, Oregon's definitely a good team. Definitely a team to watch. Yeah.
I know you like the Ducks, but I also know you have a team in a defending champs that you think.
If I had a Buckeye sound effect, I'd throw it at you. Ohio State's going to be really
Ohio
good.
Ohio State.
Ryan Day, 82-12. Remember a couple years ago when they said he can't win the big one? Then he won the big one. So all of a sudden that monkey's off his back and it's on Lanning's back, who hasn't really won those
That's true. Over the course of time.
And what goes on with Ohio State is simple. They bring Julian Sayin back at quarterback. This kid is a freshman, completed 77% of his passes, had 32 touchdowns to 8 picks. Now he comes back as a sophomore and he's better. Throw in the best receiver in the country. Jeremiah Smith is ridiculous. He runs a 4.3. He's 6.3. He's 233. He's the best wide receiver in the country. He's non-coverable. He's either too fast, too physical, or both on almost anyone he goes up against. Then you add Bo Jackson. Not that one. The other one. But this kid rushed for 1,000-plus yards last year. You also bring in Arthur Smith to be the offensive coordinator, which might bore the heck out of you a little bit. But you know this team's going to ground and pound a lot with the great Arthur Smith coming in from the NFL. So now it's going to be a little bit of a different field. The O-line, fantastic. They had Chris Henry Jr. as a freshman wide receiver, the freshman to watch on this team, named after his pop, obviously. This kid's 6'5", 195, coming into wide receiver you as a freshman. He's going to be tough to stop. You know, there's a lot of things to really love about this offense. The defense is really good, too, but here's the thing. How do you replace Caleb Downs? How do you replace Arvell Reese? How do you replace Styles? How do you replace these guys? It's going to be almost impossible, but they're still going to be really, really good. They bring in two Alabama transfers. Can you imagine people transferring out of Alabama to go to Ohio State? Caleb Downs did it a couple of years ago, won a championship. You know, they brought in two kids. They brought in James Smith to be in the defensive tackle rotation. Actually, should be the start of it, along with the kid from UCF, John Walker. And they brought in Kwa Rusa, who's going to come in and play edge opposite of budding star Kenyatta Jackson. So the front four should be solid, and they have pretty good depth there. Matt Patricia knows what he's doing, okay? Two NFL coordinators on this team. They also bring in Christian Allegrio from Wisconsin to be the linebacker that's going to sit there and be the tackling machine. Listen, he's not going to be able to replace what Styles brings, but he's going to be damn close. He's going to be able to do some good things. They also brought in two big-time safeties. Neither one is Caleb Downs, but maybe combined they're going to be able to give you that production. Terry Moore from Duke, Earl Little Jr. from Florida State. They are pretty good. This team brings a lot, and if Sayin takes the next step, Joe, if Sayin is able to sit there and make this team a little bit better, make himself a little bit better, in the big games, in the big spots, Ohio State has the uncoverable guy and is going to be tough to beat. So that's kind of where I lean right now. But, Joe, is there another team that you think has a shot of maybe finding their way into the championship of the Big Ten, maybe even winning it?
Well, you know what? I have no more sound effects for right now. But they're coming. Will Ferrell School, the USC. The Trojans, the number one recruiting class in the nation. Lincoln Riley, his fifth season. He's definitely on the hot seat. Good coach. He was good at Oklahoma. He's a quarterback whisperer. He's got Jaden Maivia, quarterback. He's got two running backs in Wayman Jordan and King Miller. The offensive line returns intact, so they're going to be all set on offense. Their key losses, though, they lost the Biletnikoff winner, Makai Lemon, tight end Lake McRae, and wide receiver Jacoby Lane. But we were able to add some transfers. They brought in Terrell Anderson from NC State, and they're bringing back Tanuk Hines and a five-star recruit in tight end Mark Bowman. So the offense is there for Lincoln Riley. Defense, they brought in a new defensive coordinator, Gary Patterson from TCU. And Gary's going to try to get that. The weak spot for them was their defense. But they brought in a freshman, a new defensive end, Luke Waffle, 6'6", 265. So he's going to try to anchor that defense, along with defensive tackle Jakeem Stewart. They're going to get their first big test September 26th, like I said, against Oregon. And that could be a key battle for who's going to be in the Big Ten title game at the end of the year. I really like USC. I think they have a chance. They definitely have a chance to compete. I think the USC-Oregon game is maybe that winner could be one half of the Big Ten title. We'll see. Will there be one half of the Big Ten title picture going forward? But I think you do feel that Indiana eventually has to be talked about as a defending champs.
Listen, I don't know if you could ever say there's been a coach that's done a better job than Kurt Cignetti has done at Indiana. Indiana was dormant. Hadn't been anywhere near a Big Ten title in our lifetime. You know, I remember when I was a kid, they had, you know, Mallory was the coach, Bill Mallory. His son went and played at Michigan. You know what I mean? That's what it was. Indiana, who has probably – the largest overall fan base and of any school. They have all this alumni. They have more money than God. They spent more money on basketball than any other school last year. They have an alumni, and they were never able to do anything, but they finally got the right coach. Cignetti's been 27-2 over 2 years at Indiana. Overall, 146-37. They won the title last year, okay? They won it all, went 16-0. But now gone is Fernando Mendoza at quarterback. And it's scary, right? You know, Fernando Mendoza was the Heisman, best player in the country. Nobody thought Fernando Mendoza was going to win the Heisman. Nobody thought Fernando Mendoza was going to be the best player in the country. No one thought that much of him coming out of Cal. They thought he was a good quarterback that was a gunslinger, threw a few picks, but he was going to be great. Going to be good. Instead, he became out great. And that's kind of what happened for this team. Now went to Josh Hoover, okay? Now, Fernando 6'5", Hoover 6'2". But Hoover's a gunslinger at TCU. The problem with Hoover, he threw 33 picks in 3 years. They throw the ball down the field. They throw it down there a lot. But this is a guy that is an NFL player. This is a guy that will make a roster. This is a guy that's not afraid to throw it deep. And this is a guy that is probably higher rated a year ago than Mendoza before Mendoza got to Indiana. So now we're going to find out if Shanahan can do the same job with Hoover as he did with Mendoza and Rourke the year before. Because remember, Rourke threw, what, 5 interceptions? Mendoza threw 6. Hoover's thrown 33 in 3 seasons. So now we're going to find out what we get. Here's the thing. O-line's going to be really good. Both tackles are back. You know, Carter Smith and Ajani are both back. They get Joe Bruner from Wisconsin. He's going to help them out, play guard. The guard moves into center. They're set. They have to replace Coogan, who is the leader of the line. They feel good about it. Charlie Becker, who some might argue was the best of the three receivers last year, better than, Surratt, better than Cooper, who went to the Jets. You know, he might be the guy. Now he's going to get to showcase that. He's back and ready to go. They also bring in a big transfer from Michigan State, Nick Marsh, who they say is a first-round talent in the NFL. So let's see what the story is there. They lose both running backs, okay? But now the bell cows are gone, but they bring in Turbo Richard from BC, and Kobe Martin is back. As he was the third guy last year. He'll get a bigger role here. So now all of a sudden, you see where the offense is going. They have some skilled players. Now it's about the defense. It's more intact. They really didn't lose as much. The starting linebackers, Jones and Hardy, are strong and returning. They combined for 180 tackles, 15 sacks, and 30 tackles for the loss last year. So these guys are good. Secondary loses Pons, but they return Jamari Sharp and Amari Farrell. So they're good. D-line is good and anchored by Tyreek Tucker. So they bring a lot back. The question is, can Cincinnati continue to find a way to – get themselves through these games? Because when you look at it, they skip Oregon this year. They skip Iowa, but they're heading, they host Ohio State. They have to head to Michigan. They host USC. They have to head to Washington, which is always scary. So they have some tough games on the schedule. They had a bye week before between Minnesota and USC at home. You know, you still have to go to Nebraska, which is never easy for anyone. So there are some things that they're going to have to face, and Hoover is going to have to just be better with the ball. But it's so hard to count out the defending national champions with a quarterback that's pretty good, Joe. So Indiana is going to be one of those teams that you have to watch all the way to the end. Joe, is there any team that you looked at when you were studying Big Ten that you just think is going to be fun to watch, a team that you can't wait to watch this year?
I think the team that everybody's fallen asleep on, and maybe because they're in the news for all the wrong reasons since the end of the college football season or towards the end of the season, Michigan, the Wolverines, because they brought in Kyle Whittingham as their coach after 20-plus years at Utah. And with him, he brought in a new coordinator. He brought in his coordinator on offense, Jason Beck from Utah, and he brought in Jay Hill as a defensive coordinator who was with him at Utah and had just finished up at BYU. So Jason Beck, he took New Mexico in 2024 from the 44th ranked offense to the fourth, and last year he took Utah from the 115th ranked offense to the fourth ranked offense. And now Michigan was the 58th ranked offense, and we'll see where he can take them now. Right now, their offense needs to be more balanced. Last year, they were 14th in the nation in run, but they were 107th in pass. But only things are going to get better. Bryce Underwood, he's going to be a sophomore, and he played the whole year last year, basically. And I think under Jason Beck's tutelage, he should be a little bit better, if not a lot better, or at least another year away. But he's got a running back in Jordan Marshall who rushed for 932 yards and 10 TDs last year. And they brought in a freshman, Savion Hyder, to help him out. The wide receiver is also one of their big return men, Andrew Marsh. And he got a transfer in from Utah for tight end in J.J. Buchanan and another transfer from Texas who left Arch Manning, who throwing him the ball, Jamie French, Jr. So then on defense, Jay Hill. He brought in with him from Utah, John Henry Daly, who had 11 and a half sacks. He brought a transfer in also from Utah, Smith Snowden. And from North Dakota State, they brought in linebacker Nathaniel Stelling. And they brought in safeties who had 81 tackles last year, Chris Bracey from Memphis. He's also bringing in a new kicker in Trey Butowski and a new punter from UNLV, Cam Brown. I mean, Michigan redesigned their whole entire team from top to bottom. They left a couple of guys on offense, but basically they did a complete transformation. And Kyle Whittingham was a good coach at Utah for all those years. He got the Utes deep into it. And I think with Big Ten talent, I think he has a good chance, maybe not this year, but to lay the groundwork for maybe 2027 being the year that Michigan is back on top in the Big Ten.
Okay, I can see that.
You know, we got to give him a little bit of time. I mean, the guy's walking in. I mean, Bryce Underwood is still only going to be a sophomore, so he does have a couple of years. I don't see Bryce leaving at the end of this year.
No, he'll be there at least another year, I'd have to imagine. You know, a team that had a real special year last year that no one talks about? Iowa, okay? Kirk Ferentz is in his 28th year, okay? What does he do? He wins. Kirk Ferentz finds a way to win with the most boring team of all time. But what I'm going to say is they have the best tradition in all of college football. The wave at the end of the first quarter to the Children's Hospital, if you haven't watched Iowa play and you haven't seen it, where the entire crowd, the visitors, the announcers, the home team, everybody is staring at the children's wing and waving to the kids up top who are watching the game. There's no more touching moment in all of college football than watching that. Here's the thing with Iowa. Last year they had four losses, okay? Let's look at them. Lost to Indiana, defending champs by five. Lost in a great game to Oregon by two, 18-16. They lost to Iowa State by three early in a game that they fell behind early, but then stormed back, couldn't pull it out. And then they lost to USC by five. They are in every game. Why? Because they play defense. They're physical. They're rugged. They run the ball. Problem is, they lose the quarterback, Mark Gronkowski, who's probably one of the best quarterbacks of all time when you look at what he did in his FCS days. Now it comes down to Jeremy Hicklinski, who's kind of a young guy that can move around a little bit, or Hank Brown. We're going to see who's going to take it over the reins. We're not sure yet. Neither is as good as Gronkowski, though, so it's going to be a step back. The good news is that the ground and pound gets Kamari Moulton back, right? I mean, he rushed for 878, five touchdowns, 5 yards a carry, and everybody knows they're running the damn ball. And the kid was still able to get 5 yards a pop. O-line is good. It's Iowa. O-line's always good. Not really a question mark over there. Iowa always just produces these big corn-fed guys that get everything done. Tristan Wirfs on down, right? Wide receivers, not good, okay? They don't get separation. They never throw the ball downfield. It always seems like it's a little bit of a struggle watching Iowa to get it down there. But the tight ends usually are, and DJ Bonhomme is going to be a good one. He's only a sophomore. He's got size and skill. We're going to see what they do with him. They had to rebuild the D-line. They did. They used the portal well to do so. You know, that's kind of what the key is. No superstars, but they brought a bunch of guys that they're able to keep in rotation. Best play is the hybrid safety, Zach Luttner, on defense. He's the key to the defense. They brought in a Villanova transfer, Anthony Hawkins, to play the other side of that safety role with him. It's going to make a formidable duo. The thing about Iowa is they're never going to be exciting to watch. They're going to run the ball and then run the ball. They'll kick field goals. They'll punt. They have to figure out a way to get the ball downfield a little bit more. That's why they've made all these changes, including Ferentz's son getting blown out a couple of years back. They have to find a way to be a little bit more explosive on offense. But usually Iowa finds a way to be in the hunt, and that's kind of what I expect to happen this year, Joe. So, Joe, we've talked about what we think are the top six teams.
Yep.
Yeah.
My question to you is, Iowa's always in the hunt. Is that what the university wants, just to be – always, you know, 6, 7, 8 in the Big Ten? I mean, at what point? I mean, and I like Kirk Ferentz. I don't have a problem with him. But it's like 6, 7, 8 every single year. Eventually, there's got to be something, right?
They have to beat the good teams at some point. You have to find a way. I mean, last year, I mean, close in college football means absolutely nothing. Let's be honest.
I mean, that's it. I mean, that's the frustrating part. I mean, we went through that year where they scored like 15 points a game. Like every game, you'd be like, what are we doing? We're settling for field goal. I mean, it's very frustrating to watch Iowa play.
Especially in college football, the way that the sport is run now, it is so much of a high-octane offensive sport now. Listen, when we were growing up, Joe –
it was different.
Down in town, you watch Oklahoma play with then Nebraska, and you saw Billy Sims rushing against Jarvis Redwine, and it was just handed off 30 times. Wishbone at Oklahoma, you know, it did a lot of different things. Now everybody's airing it out, and Iowa doesn't ever seem to have the personnel to do so.
No,
but they're always a tough out. You never want to go to Kinnick because they can beat you at any given time. You know, we need to get back to the Hayden Fry days of, you know, winning. Chuck Long at quarterback. Wide plays. Winning big games.
They got to win something big. Something. Because, I mean, after a while, the fan base is seeing Indiana win, like you said. And they're seeing Oregon and USC come into the conference and win. Now, USC hasn't, but Oregon won the Big Ten title their first year, regular season title. So, you know, they're seeing other teams come in and win. And they're just sitting there, you know, 6, 7, 8, 6, 7, 8, you know, I don't want to do a 6, 7, but this is exactly, you know, they're like a middle of the road team forever.
You know, it's funny though, right? Because we talk about Kirk Ferentz. What about Dan Lanning? I mean, like, if he doesn't do it with this squad,
I mean, he's got all the tools.
For Dan Lanning getting blown out of here for not winning with Oregon with the talent that they've had. I mean, he wins, but
no,
that championship game.
I hear you. I think Dan Lanning he's on the grill here. He's got to win. I think he's got to win the Big Ten title, either the championship game or the outright title. And he's got to get to the championship game in the playoff, because I don't think any other thing, these people are going to be like, what more do you want? You're basically bringing everybody back, and you even got your quarterback to stay, and the quarterback knows there's a chance he could get drafted by the Jets. So there you go, to even come back and take that risk. But, you know, I don't know. Dan Lanning, I agree. Dan Lanning, he's got to get the job done. You get 48-8 over 5 years and have nothing to one Big Ten title. And, you know, that there's nothing at that point because it wasn't, you know, you won the regular season thing. So you
got blown out in the playoff by Ohio State, who blew out almost everybody.
And they blew out got blown out by Indiana.
It's
so, you know, it's obviously when the calendar turns to January, Dan Lanning's got to change the narrative.
So now there's a million teams that would love to have a Dan Lanning leading them. But now Oregon's got to think about, is Dan Lanning the guy that gets us to the next level? And the same thing with Lincoln Riley. I mean, Lincoln Riley doesn't win this year. He's out.
Oh, he's got to be. He's got to be because their fan base in USC is not going to be happy. I mean, and they've got to see that too. So that Lincoln Riley has a short leash. I think he's on the hot seat as well. Maybe not Big Ten title, but at least being in the hunt and in the mix at the top of the Big Ten, and then maybe sneaking into the playoff. If he doesn't make the playoff, he better get into a real good bowl game, like the first one right out of the playoff. And they could say, okay, you know what? We got bounced because, you know, we were the fourth team in the Big Ten and we couldn't make the last spot. But still, he's got to have a good year. I mean, some of these guys, you know, Ryan Day is going nowhere. Cignetti's going nowhere. They're going to give Winningham's got probably years to go. They're not going to get rid of him at Michigan. They're looking for stability after Harbaugh and stuff. And I know you're not a big Harbaugh guy. And then
he's a great coach. I just don't think he's a good guy, but he's a great coach.
I hear you.
Michigan in the lurch, stormed right out. Like the classy guy he is.
But, you know, one of the things is that – so you have your upper echelon in the Big Ten. So we have our top six. Then we get to the middle of the road teams. And one team that I'm looking at as a possible surprise team is Penn State. With Matt Campbell coming in from Iowa State, you know, Penn State sneakily, they avoid Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana on their schedule this year. So they really do have an opportunity in the Big Ten for a little bit of a surprise. Their first big test is September 26th against Wisconsin. So they'll have a couple of games under their belt. They brought in from Iowa State the transfer quarterback, Rocco Becht, and he could actually be – he's one of my candidates as a surprise towards the bottom of the Heisman list. I don't see him in the top five yet, but I see him slowly. If you know, avoiding certain teams, avoiding Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana gives you a chance to pad some stats against some other teams. You have a chance to get some yardage up and some other stuff. They brought in a lot of Ohio State guys. They brought in Ben Brommer, tight end, Carson Hansen. They brought in running back James Peoples from Ohio State. Imagine somebody transferring from Ohio State to Penn State. On the defensive side, they have a new defensive coordinator in Danton Lynn. And they, scarily enough, they have a transfer guy from UCLA, Siali Tapuke. I think I said it right. I probably said it wrong. 8 years he's played in the NCAA. So just as a sidebar.
Really ridiculous, by the
this
way.
This is getting crazy because I still have 4 years of eligibility left. It's getting a little crazy. They also have linebackers Caleb Bacon and Cooper Ebel, and the return on their defensive side from an ACL injury from Tony Rojas. So do I think Penn State is going to be in the top six? No. But do I think they're going to be at the right in the middle? Yes, they have a possibility by avoiding Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana, which would have been three losses. You know, I think they have a chance. I also think, you know, we forget that last year Penn State was originally the preseason number two before everything fell apart and the wheels came off. So
they lost that game to Oregon. That was
And then they lost the game to UCLA. And then
that was that.
So one of the things is, you know, is Penn State, you know, are they back yet? No. But is Matt Campbell going to be a good presence? I think so. And I think Penn State has a chance to at least keep themselves and maybe be right behind Iowa in the conversation in the 6-7 spot.
You know what's funny? team I like that's going to sneak up on people, in my opinion, are the Bruins at UCLA. And this is weird. It's almost like trying to catch lightning in a bottle. You know, Indiana goes out, dormant program. They go get Kurt Cignetti, or Cignetti, as they say, but the Italians know it's Cignetti. And you know what? The simple fact of the matter is you don't know what you're going to get. He brings a bunch of transfers from JMU. They make the playoff in their first year, get knocked out by Indiana, by Notre Dame, I should say, and then they win it all in the second year. So UCLA says, hey, I got an idea. What about the great Bob Chesney from James Madison? Same school, taking a bunch of the same guys out. James Madison players to go out to California, out to Westwood, right? Here's the thing about Chesney. He wanted a little school in Rhode Island known as Salve Regina.
That's my brother's alma mater.
Hey, that's why it's mentioned, Joe. Then he wanted Assumption, you know, a school that your brother didn't go to.
Yeah.
Another beautiful, beautiful private Catholic school. Then he went to Holy Cross. Then to James Madison, where he gets him into the playoff. And against that Oregon defense you were talking about, they ran up over 500 yards. They were not afraid in that game. So his only losing season in his 16 seasons was a 5-6 year at Holy Cross. But he won big there. So then you bring in Chesney, and UCLA thinks, wow, okay, we're going to try to get something going here with this guy. And 3-9 last year, this team was horrible, okay? Deshaun Foster let go partway through the season. Wasn't really just a head coach. He was a UCLA guy after Chip Kelly abandoned and everything else that went awry out there. They wanted to try to get someone that was a UCLA guy, but he just didn't have it in him, right? So now they're hoping they get this magic potion. And he has some talent to work with. Very quiet this summer. But last summer, all the talk was about Nico Iamalavea. I always say his name wrong. I'm sorry. Nico, less drama, great talent. He almost single-handedly kept Tennessee in the game against Ohio State. They lost big in that game, but Nico was not the problem. It was everybody else. They pick up JMU's running back, Wayne Knight, follows his coach. Big time 1,400-yard rusher last year with 9 touchdowns. The O-line should be better, but it's all transfer, so you're hoping, you know. The O-line sucked last year. So now they got to figure out what they're going to do up there. The receivers, they lost a couple of their top guys, so they got to wait for guys to gel as well. But they're banking on Chesney bringing a little bit of toughness to this team, brought both coordinators out with them from JMU. Defensively, they need a lot of improvement, right? Only 10 sacks last year, last in the country. It's hard to do 10 sacks in the amount of games you play 12, right? They need a pass rush. Add Shahir West from James Madison, who had a huge year rushing the passer. They also get an Oklahoma transfer at linebacker and Sammy Amusaho, who is really a tackling machine. It's going to help them, and the secondary was already good. So there's a lot of things to like about UCLA. What they're doing is banking on Chesney kind of turning it around for them. The one thing to remember about this team, no Indiana, no Ohio State, no Washington, which you'd figure like being on the West Coast, you'd make sure you play each other. We're going to find out a little about this team. Week 1, they go to Cal, okay? Not that Cal's an ACC, juggernaut, but they get a road game and Chesney's open, and they come back for San Diego State, who had an amazing defense last year. If they can find a way to get 0-2, they get Purdue at home in Game 3, which is a game that they will be favored in. And then they go to Maryland. If they can figure out a way, like Kurt did in his first year when he got off like that really quick start, they can be 4-0 with a bye heading to Oregon, which they're not going to win. But this is a team that can find a way to get 6-7 wins, be competitive, have a quarterback that knows how to win in clutch spots, and a coach that knows how to win games. So I'm excited about UCLA. I think this is a team that can do something special, Joe.
All right, we'll see what happens. They caught a little. Remember last year, they got a little bit. They had that one stretch where they won a couple of games in a row, and people thought, okay, now they're going to go. And then they just fell apart again.
Exactly. It was not a very good defensive squad.
No, it was not. Now, another team I've been watching was the Huskies in Washington. You know, Jed Fish, the problem that he's got, he's 2-7 in the Big Ten on road games. You got to win the road games if you're going to make any headway in this conference. And is 10 wins a possibility? I don't know. They do have a Heisman hopeful in DeMond Williams Jr., who had a whole controversy where he signed he had an NIL deal. Then he went into the portal. Then 2 days later, he decided after the school was going to sue him that he's got to go back, and he returned to the school. So they had a little bit of controversy. But other than that, he's back, and he's there. They got a good offensive line, John Mills. They have a freshman who I seem to like, Cody Green from Mater Dei in California, who seems to be going to be a good offensive lineman for them. They have they need running back help. Right now they brought in a guy from Troy, Trey Cooley, and they brought in Jaden Lamar from Oregon. And they have a freshman also in the running back area, Brian Bonner, who's a four-star recruit from Valencia, California. They did lose to the NFL. They lost Denzel Boston and Jonah Coleman, a wide receiver and running back, to the NFL. And they lost Adam Mohammed to Cal, a running back. On their defense, they have their anchors coming back, Ellen Ellis Davis and Jacob Lane, and linebackers Alexander Manu and Rainey Sale are coming back. So they should be pretty good. I think Washington has a chance. They start the season off, you know, now with the – because there's the new Pac-12 and they're in the Big Ten, the Apple Cup is their kickoff game September 5th against Washington State, and then their big test is early on is October 3rd against USC at home. So the Huskies, do they have a chance? They do. They got Washington State, and then they got Minnesota at USC, Iowa at Purdue, at Nebraska, Penn State, Michigan State. They have Indiana and Oregon to end the season. So if they get to that deep, they have a chance. Maybe they could sneak up on somebody, but it looks to be, we'll see how they end up. But right now, Washington's got an outside chance to win 9 or 10 games in the Big Ten.
Okay, another school just to touch on, because, listen, this team, college football needs this team to rebound. They need the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They need the legendary Tom Osborne squad to come back. The Turner Gill, Irving Fryer guys, Mike Rozier, Jarvis Redwine, like I mentioned earlier. You know, they need Scott Frost. They need Nebraska to be good again. Remember when Nebraska's stadium is the second biggest city in the state when they have a home game? I mean, it is humongous. They need Nebraska to be good. And I thought Matt Rhule was going to be a hell of a hire for these guys. And it just hasn't panned out. He's 19-19 in his years there, which is just not good enough going into his fourth year. So now what do we need? Need Nebraska to kind of kick it up a notch and get to the next level, okay? It's a Dana Halverson offense. How has this team struggle offensively? It doesn't make sense. And losing Rayola to Oregon hurts, right? Rayola was a huge recruit for them. And it wasn't his fault that they weren't getting things done. But they actually go and they get Anthony Calandria from UNLV, who's more of a dual threat guy. And maybe, just maybe, does some things with Halverson's offense that Rayola couldn't do. They have strong skill players, but they need the O-line to be better. Nebraska was like Iowa, like Missouri, like certain schools that just roll out, Wisconsin, just roll out offensive linemen. Suddenly they're struggling on that. They can't afford to. Nebraska has to be great on that. They bring back stud linebacker Owen Chambliss, who's just a tackling machine. But the thing is, they need to be better up front. Both lines of scrimmage are what's costing costing Nebraska. Right. And this used to be the strength. And Matt Rhule was known for tough, gritty lines everywhere you went, even in the pros. They wanted to be physical with them. They need to do that. They need to get the lines going. They need to find a way to beat good teams. They haven't done that. Nebraska is one of those Big Ten sleepers, right, that you expect to be much better than they are. Nebraska just have to find the right fit. They need the right players. They need to get some excitement going on. They need to make Lincoln hopping again. Lincoln at 3:30 on a Saturday afternoon should be the place to be, and it hasn't been for the last few years. So now let's see if Nebraska can bounce back, Joe. I mean, again, I don't expect a ton from them. I expect them to go bowling, but I'd like to see a little bit more. I want to see Nebraska finally beat a good team and put the Big Ten on notice.
Could happen. If I asked you, what team has won 9 straight bowl games, the longest current streak?
And it's because I'm wearing the University of Minnesota t-shirt,
that's right,
I'm going to say it's the Golden Gophers.
That's who it is. And nobody else would probably know that. the Golden Gophers with P.J. Fleck, who last year made the bold prediction that they were going to make the college football playoff. That didn't work out too well. Now, he's got Drake Lindsay at quarterback, and they have to improve this run game. They did lose on the defensive side Coy Parrish to Oregon, and they are a mid-level team. Interestingly enough, here's where their schedule gets interesting. They play from September 26th, they're at Washington. The next week, they host Michigan. Then they go to Purdue. Then 2 weeks later, they host Iowa. And then they're at Indiana to end October. So at the end of October, they could have lost three or four games right there, and they could be basically hanging on to get into that bowl game and try to set the try to move the record to 10. The all-time record is 11 for those of you scoring at home. Florida State has that. From the
Floyd of Rosedale Trophy. You're telling me that pig is going to be a big part of this for
It is.
They got some talent, though. Lindsey's back for a second year. They haven't done that in a while. Darius Taylor's a good running back. I mean, they return some offensive linemen. They have a stud defensive end that can get to the quarterback. I think Minnesota's pretty good. If I told you that Michigan State had fallen on the hardest times of any Big Ten team recently, you'd laugh because Michigan State was always a perennial power.
Yeah.
But here's what they do. They bring Pat Fitzgerald back. That's right. Mr. Fitzgerald, after the hazing scandal at Northwestern, winning this lawsuit because he was found that he had no knowledge of it. He goes to rival Michigan State to try to get this righted. Brings a hard nose. You know, it's Pat Fitzgerald. They're going to play hard defense. They're going to play hard nose. They're going to be physical. You know, they're going to try to find a way to get back to glory, and they're going to try to do it with defense and a coach that knows how to win and won at a place where nobody was winning for many, many years. They bring in Alessio Milojevic back at quarterback. Kid took over for Childs last year and did well. He's good. The problem with this team was the O-line. He was running for his life. If Fitzgerald could get the O-line going, Michigan State can be a team that gets bowling. They just got to win two more than they won last year, get to 6-6. You know the defense is going to be good. You know they're going to force turnovers. You know they're going to play physical. Now they just have to put it all together. It may take more than one season for Pat to get this team right, but it's hard to imagine that Pat Fitzgerald isn't going to get Michigan State with the resources they have to be a better squad, Joe.
I hear you. But his old school Northwestern, well, they have David Braun at coach, and they have new upgrades to Ryan Field, $860 million later, and they're going to open it up on October 2nd against Penn State. So that'll be the chance to see the new Ryan Field. They brought in Chip Kelly to run the offense. They have one returner from their offensive line, and they brought in Aiden Childs, as you mentioned, from Michigan State. The defense, can the defense stop the pass? That's going to be the big question for Northwestern this year. But I think bringing in Chip Kelly should be interesting. You know, he'll in this role, he does all right as offensive coordinator. Head coach, not so well, but he's good offensive coordinator. So let's see what he can do with Northwestern. And we'll see. They're still low level in the Big Ten, but they do have September 26th. They're going to go to Indiana. That'll be a litmus test. And then October 2nd, they open up their stadium and they host Penn State. So we'll see how Northwestern does.
Now, if we want to take the metropolitan areas only local powerhouse, it's got to be the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Here's the thing about Rutgers, and I know they're not great. I get it. But Greg Schiano gets these guys to play hard on a regular basis. All right? They bring in Dylan Lonergan from BC, who had a really strong year for them last year. They lose Ethan Calicmanis, got drafted by the Washington Commanders. But Lonergan can sling it. Big-time running back with Antoine Raymond. Rushed for 1,240 born yards and 13 touchdowns last year. Wide receiver room is good. K.J. Duff leads away with 60 catches, 1,084 yards, 7 touchdowns. The O-line's got to be a little bit better, a little bit more physical. You feel like they're going to chop wood at Rutgers, and they're going to get these guys going. On defense, this team needs to get to the quarterback. If it wasn't for UCLA, they would have been last. 11 sacks. That's it. Not only that, the run defense was horrendous. So they're going to have to figure out how to do things on the defensive side of the ball. The secondary is good, but they really need the help up front. So for Rutgers, again, this is a team that's not going to get to the upper echelon. Their goal is to go bowling again. That's what they're trying to accomplish. They are not there yet. New Jersey's a hotbed for recruitment. They have to find a way to keep some of the superstars home. They have to kind of own the Northeast for the Big Ten. That's really what their goal is. Rutgers, I think, is going to be a team that's going to surprise a few people.
Well, you know, one team in the middle of the pack that we didn't talk about yet, Illinois, the Fighting Illini. And, you know, Brett Bielema, as their coach, you know, he's got a team that's 5-3 against the top 25 in the last 2 years. So when he does play some of these teams, he plays them close, he plays them tough. Okay? They've got Caden Hauser at quarterback, and they're going to play Duke early in September. And then they have Ohio State at the end of the month. So they'll play the defending ACC champs, and then they'll play Ohio State at the end of the month. So that'll be two good tests for Illinois. But they do. They're probably middle of the pack, like in Iowa, or right below in Iowa. But I do think they have a good chance. And by the way, they are putting a new video board in their stadium for this year. So if you're going out there, check it out. But that's the Illini.
Just a couple more teams. We want to make sure everybody gets a little bit of love here. We want to talk about everybody. The Wisconsin Badgers, okay? You want to ask me, how does Luke Fickell keep his job last year? I don't know. This team averaged a monstrous 12.8 points per game. This is Wisconsin. This is Barry Alvarez. Even under the Paul Chryst, they did something. This is a program that should be dominant in the Big Ten, and was for years the land of Ron Dane and Moss and all these running backs. They averaged under 13 points a game, but Luke Fickell's back again. And now, I know they dealt with quarterback injuries, but this year you hope that Colton Joseph comes in from Old Dominion and he doesn't get hurt. And maybe they air it out. They bring in Abu Sama from Iowa State, who's a big, strong, fast running back. Defense is pretty good. It should get better. The defense wasn't the problem. But what we need to see from Wisconsin is, does Fickell, A, survive the year, and B, can they get off to a fast enough start where they're a player again? Because Wisconsin should be an upper echelon team every year in the Big Ten, and the Fickell experiment of going from a ground-and-pound team to an air-and-out team just hasn't fit well in Madison right now. We're just not getting it done, Joe. I can't believe we're talking about Wisconsin this low in the pecking order. Really surprised.
And you know what? It's the changing of the tide. Another team that's at the bottom, Purdue, the Boilermakers. Number one in basketball, number 18 in college football. You know, they have an 18-game Big Ten losing streak. The last time they won a Big Ten game was in 2023. They have 53 new players this year. Barry Odom's the coach. They were 1-11. Last year, he got them to 2-10. The goal this year is hopefully a 4-8 or a 4-9 season. They got to get at least one or two more wins. It's going to be a slow process at Purdue. It's going to take time. But they got to win just one Big Ten game. That's it. Just one.
We're not asking for a lot.
What did you say?
They got to get off the snide. They got to get one.
They do. September 19th, they got UCLA. Then they got Illinois October 3rd, Minnesota October 10th, Washington October 17th, Penn State October 31st, Maryland November 7th. Maybe that's their game. November 14th at Iowa, November 21st, Wisconsin, and November 28th at Indiana. This team could go 0-9 again.
No, it could be. I mean, listen, the Big Ten is a gauntlet. They got to find a way to win one or two of those home games.
Well, it's
last team to talk about here, pal.
Yeah.
The Terps. And you know what? They're not bad. I mean, listen, when you look at the Terps, fourth quarter was a problem. They got outscored 102-34 last year. Fumbles, they lost five. They only forced two fumbles. Sacks, they helped, but it was a strength. They had 27 sacks. They only gave up 9 for 79 yards. Now, part of that is because of the quick release of the offense with Mike Locksley's squad. Part of that is because sophomore quarterback Malik Washington is just really a fun kid to watch. He's going to be inaccurate from time to time, but there's no question this kid's got talent. Played a lot as a freshman, did great things. They added two solid receiving options from the portal for Washington, and Dorian Fleming returns as the tight end as well. He had 40 catches last year, so he should have people to throw the ball to. Like I said, the O-line only gave up 9 sacks. But this team only had time of possession for 27 minutes, so they were abysmal at that. They have to hold the ball a little bit longer. Defense returns their top 2 pass rushers, which is good. Plus, they had the big-time recruit in Zion Ealy, who should help at the edge. They got to be better against the pass. The thing is that Maryland's schedule isn't brutal. They can get to the 6 wins. They can get to the 7 wins. They can get a good bowl game here. Loxley's, they're doing it with youth. It wasn't a huge portal year for them. They're trying to just get these young guys to play. So when you look at these teams, and listen, I know we're discounting Maryland and Wisconsin on my end, and Joe is discounting Purdue. You know, 2 years ago, everybody discounted Indiana, right? Nobody thought with Kurt Cedetti, is he going to win with James Madison players in the Big Ten? And the answer was, and an Ohio transfer, a quarterback from the MAC? And the answer was, yes, he was. And you know what? So at any point in time, any of these schools, now I said Bob Chesney, UCLA can go 1-11. And maybe it's, you know, Loxley that gets Maryland going, Joe. I mean, it could be any one of these teams. There's a lot of talent on all these squads. We just need gelling to happen on lines of scrimmage. You know, it's going to be who can stop the run, who can get off the field on third down. It's all the basic stuff. It's a fine line between winning and losing, Joe.
I agree. You never know. We won't know until September starts and we kick off these games and we see everybody on the field. We can only, you know, when you read them on paper, how many times do we say on paper, this team should do this, this, then this? But in reality, they actually have to go out and perform and they got to avoid injury. And everybody is one injury away. And that's why I still like Oregon to win the conference, because they have 2 quarterbacks. They have a starter and they have a backup that's a true number one and could be a number one at any moment. So they are. That's why I think they have the best chance.
All right, Joe. So if I had to ask you a question, I'm going to stick with Ohio State, but it's close between Oregon and Ohio State for me. I'm just trusting Day over Lanning. That's all it is. If I said, right, and we're not making predictions right now on playoffs and stuff like that, but if I said pick the one team that you think is going to surprise in a positive light, who would it be?
USC.
Okay. And the one team that's going to disappoint, that everybody's expecting to be a little bit better than they are?
Indiana.
Okay.
I think people like Indiana, and they think, you know, based off of last year, but I don't see it. I think there's going to be a drop-off. The quarterback is a big position. Now, if I had to ask you, who do you think? Who's your surprise?
I think that the Gophers are a surprise. I think the Gophers are going to win 9 games. I think that they're going to play people tough. They got a lot of kids coming back. They haven't had the continuity at quarterback for the last couple of years. They've been going 1 and done, 3 straight quarterbacks. This kid, Lindsey's playing for 2 years. I think that helps them. Running back's good. The defense is improved. They're losing Coy Parrish. Hurts really does. Yeah. He's a nice safety for them. But they'll find a way.
Who's your disappointment? Who do you think is going to fall off?
I think Indiana could struggle, but I also think that Michigan's not going to have a great year again. I think Michigan's going to be battling, you know, 7-5 type of team. I don't think Michigan's going to be a 9-3, 10-2 type team. I think Michigan is just Underwood's got to show me something this year. He's got to show me something this year that he can take to the next level. I know what Kyle Whittingham is, but the expectation at Utah compared to the expectation at Michigan are 2 different animals.
True.
So now we're going to find out how he handles high expectation. I know that he did have it in the Big 12, and that's great. But this is the Big 10, son. This is a different league. So
Conference of Champions. Conference of Champions.
Do you think Matt Campbell's a good hire for Penn State?
I do think so. I think they got to right the ship. They need stability. I mean, I thought James Franklin was a good coach. I actually like James Franklin as a coach, and I think he's going to do fine. The wheels just fell off, and they had to make a change, and it probably was the better for both in that case. He split. He got to take the rest of the year off. And then come back, and he's got a whole new thing, and we'll talk about his teams in the next couple of weeks. But I think Campbell was a good hire. I think Penn State is going to be, you know, it's going to take maybe a year or two, or maybe this year is a year and they surprise. I don't think they're going to be as much of a surprise as USC. I think Lincoln Riley is going to get them into the playoff. if I had to have three bold predictions, one of them would be USC making it to the 12-team playoff.
Okay. While you're on it, give me the other two then.
I think Dante Moore is going to be a Heisman Trophy winner. I know that's not going out too much on a limb, but I do think he came back to Oregon. I think all the pieces are in place for him, and I think he's got a good chance at that. And I like the kid, the offensive lineman for Washington, Cody Green, to be a surprise freshman and really make a good stance for the Huskies.
My three bold takes, Indiana doesn't make the playoff this year. Much like you were saying, I think Indiana's going to fall just short. I think a lot of teams in the Big Ten improved, like USC, I think like Washington, I think like Penn State, I think like Minnesota. I think there are a bunch of teams that are right there in that next echelon. I think Iowa's always dangerous. I think, there's a lot to like in the Big Ten, and I think Indiana's going to be good but not great. I think Nico is going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. Not saying he's going to be amazing. I actually am saying he's going to be amazing. I think that Nico is going to put up some big numbers in the Chesney offense with the running game. I think that they're going to find a way to get him going. I thought he played well despite the fact UCLA was awful last year. I thought he ran for his life and he was great. And I think Minnesota's going to get 9-plus wins. I think they're going to get at least 9, maybe 10 wins. I think Minnesota's veteran team is going to be a team that people are not going to want to play, especially in Minneapolis. So those would be my bold takes for the Big Ten. Joe, is there anything else that you'd like to add about the Big Ten before we wrap up here today?
No, I think we're all right. I think we got a lot done on the Big Ten. I think it's going to be, top to bottom, a very, very tough conference. And it's going to be good to watch it play out during the year.
I feel the same way. We are, Joe and Darren, we are going to be talking about college football and college basketball year long. The name of the show, Bowl Games and Brackets, okay? We love college sports. There's a passion. We don't love the NIL. We don't love what it's done to the sport. We don't love not watching or watching kids not grow through programs. We miss that part of it. But there is something magical about the pageantry that goes on in college sports, and we hope to bring that to you. This is a show of Joe and I talking, doing a preview. Throughout the year, we're going to be trying to do a lot more with guests, get you interesting interviews, let you learn from the people on campus and the people that know these teams inside and out as we learn these teams inside and out. And our goal is to make sure we deliver the best product that we possibly can. So follow us on our social media. We're going to give you all the social media handles and tags as we go forward. Follow us on YouTube. You can watch us every week. We're going to be doing multiple shows a week. We're going to be recapping. We're going to be doing previewing. We're going to give you everything you need to know so that when you're making those bets on Saturday, you're winning money. And we hope that you will join the revolution that is Bowl Games and Brackets. Thanks for being out there. We look forward to talking to you guys each and every week. Have a good night.
Peace out.